position number 22346, wheel 6.
Captain Riggs, wheel 6.
Well, we got in May. This was in May. No, a little bit later on, perhaps, and by about September 1941, we suddenly got instructions to move. And believe it or not, we ended up in the dreaded Cassassine camp again outside Alexandria.
Was this the whole brigade?
Yes, the whole brigade.
And the artillery.
Yes, we would have had had some of our artillery people with us at the time. And we were told from there we were going to go to a very secret destination. Well, we've been told this about three or four times during the war, so we didn't get terribly excited about that. And indeed, we had not much idea what was going on anywhere else because, you know, information was virtually nil apart from over the next hedge. You had little idea what was going on. Typical infantry role. But in fact, we were bound for Tobruk. So, after a day or two and a bit of sorting out, I suppose, and re-kitting, but not very much, we found ourselves with deck cargo and destroyers at Alexandria, and they took us up to Tobruk with boxes of 3.7 anti-aircraft ammunition loose on the deck, and we were loose on the deck as well. And aft, half a battalion went on the destroyer, which are much smaller than destroyers are today, of course. And it was a very noisy and vibrating and splashing and wet trip up. But we set off, I suppose we would have set off early in the morning from Alexandria. And the idea is you got within a certain distance of Tobruk by the time the light went. Because the Germans had an airfield sitting over the top of Tobruk, and they knew all this supply was going on by sea. They had been besieged for some months by that time. And what happened was, as soon as they got onto this particular line, where they were out of the range of our air cover, and kept coming within the range of the Stukas, at, then they turned the taps on full blast. The whole ship was shaking like nothing on earth.
Was this deafening daylight, this voyage?
No, this is just as it got dark. So they aimed to be within a certain distance of Tobruk, just as it was getting dark, just about where the rim of the Stukas range was. And then they turn on everything. They did their full 30-something knots. And the vibration was absolutely unbelievable. You know, the cases of 3.7 ammunition were jumping about on the deck, and the spray was coming over. And but still, it didn't last very long. And I suppose about 10 o'clock at night, they eventually edged into Tobruk Harbour, which was full of wrecks, of course. The wrecks were the jetties. And we were told that we had to be off in 20 minutes, half a battalion. I mean, we hadn't got any heavy kit with us. It's very, very little. And because they were going to get off that, get the stores off, get Australians on, who we were relieving in the Tobruk garrison at this time. And they needed to be away by, I don't know, 1 a.m. or whatever, so that by the time it was light, they were clear enough of the range of the Stukas and hopefully getting within the range of our own fighter cover from the desert. So that was the story of that.
How did you manage to accomplish that rapid disembarkation?
Well, they had sort of planking and stuff like that, and jetties. I mean, they were rolling off cans of four-gallon cans of petrol, just chucking them across this bit of planking onto the shore, and somebody eventually picked it up. And any minute, you reckon one was going to blow up and blow all of us up as well. But it was a real rush job, because the ships could only stay for perhaps an hour alongside before they reckoned they had orders. Whatever, they were going to cast off and set off back for Alexandria. They did lose a few ships on this run from time to time.
It's all done in the dark.
Well, in the harbour, yes, it was all done at night time. And in fact, for some days each side of a full moon, they didn't come at all. Because, you know, the enemy aircraft could see their wash on the bright moonlight nights. And so only about 15, 16 days of the months did they actually run into Tobruk. It wasn't just single, they came up, you know, in convoys of destroyers and light cruisers as well.
Did you have an escort then when you...
Well, no, we were on the warships themselves. There was no escort per se. They were all doing their own escorting, so to speak, and carting us in and quite a lot of stores as well. I mean, the times there were merchant ships, I believe, who went in and out. They had some which evacuated wounded and carried heavier things. I mean, they did actually manage to get a few tanks in and vehicles and. No doubt the odd 25-pounder, although most of the 25-pounders in Tobruk had got no rifling in them by then, the barrels. they wobbled down the barrels, the shot, and we wondered how short sometimes they were going to fall. But that was something else we learnt a bit later on. And so we got ashore, and we were met, we went into a staging area a little way from the harbour. And then we were collected by a couple of our advance party who'd gone in beforehand and some Australians. The 2nd 17th Australian Infantry Regiment, we were taking over from them. And we took over a sector across the what was known as the Bardia Road, which was the road running east, the coast road running east out of Tobruk.
Towards
Egypt, yes. And we had a 2-mile stretch of the perimeter to look after.
Just one battalion.
One battalion, yes.
Front.
Yes. Because there was something 20, I forget how long the perimeter was, but it could have been something like 16, 18, 20 miles.
It's a long perimeter for a battalion to hold.
Two miles was a long, yes. I mean, there was a reserve battalion and one of next door to us, I remember, with a Black Watch. I think the York and Lancasters were slightly further back in a sort of a reserve role. But we had to man all the posts all along around the perimeter. And then there was the other brigades, and there was a Polish brigade on the western sector. They were out there.
What was the view like forward from your positions?
Perimeter, flat desert, pretty flat. You couldn't really see where there was any undulation or dead ground. There were one or two, wrecked vehicles out there, wrecked tanks, but it was pretty flat for a mile or two.
And what sort of posts did you take over from the Australians?
Oh, well, they were Italian-built originally. And the Italians had built a complete sort of fortification structure right round Tobruk in the 1930s, I suppose. There were, there were concrete posts. Sometimes, you know, you could go down quite low. and the companies, of course, the platoons and companies occupied these around our 2-mile stretch. And the battalion headquarters was set a bit further back. We were in a stone house in a sunken wadi a bit further back. From the odd funny sort of maps that we did see from time to time, which were Italian ones, we got rather the impression that it was an Italian officer's sort of recreation center. We always said it was an Italian officer's brothel, because an old friend of mine, aged 94 now, who's son was a British ambassador, a son-in-law until fairly recently. I always liked telling him that I spent about 3 months with his father-in-law in an Italian officer's brothel on one occasion, particularly when he's got some of his ex-diplomat friends with him, you know. He thought that was quite impressive. But that's a bit of a by-the-by. We had now signals I had 28 miles of cable and about 5 or 6 telephone exchanges.
That's a very elaborate network. What were they serving? Were you going down?
They had an exchange at each of the company headquarters, and they had telephone lines out to each of the fixed bunker positions, if you like to call them that, along the perimeter. So a company would want, a telephone with each platoon.
Yes.
And then they would have an exchange at the company headquarters.
And they would have a line back to
to the battalion. And indeed, the battalion had a line back to the brigade headquarters. I'm not quite sure where that was. But maintaining those 28 miles of line with the same small number of guys, including manning a slightly more elaborate exchange at battalion headquarters, was no joke. And indeed, some of the lines went through minefields. And, of course, they had been laid by others before us. And the insulation was wearing, and we had to go and put new sections in from time to time, if we could find the cable to do it. And there was always the problems, of course, of vehicles, armored vehicles. You couldn't bury the cable or couldn't stick it up on poles at all. And so it was more or less, it was just laid along the, in fact, we preferred to put it along the rim of minefields if we could, because there was a better chance that vehicles wouldn't start churning it all up. Of course, if a track vehicle went across a bit of cable, that was the end of the cable. There was a lot for the guys to do all that time. And so we settled down there. The Australians, we thought, oh my God, you know, it's going to be a pretty sort of shambolic takeover, but not a bit of it. They had got absolutely everything beautifully tied up. They were quite wonderful. And particularly with regard to mines, which had been laid by ourselves, by Italians, by Germans, by ourselves. Some had been lifted, some hadn't. They'd been there right from the early days of the Tobruk siege. And in fact, you know, they'd had some pretty hefty battles. At one time, the Germans had broken in, and they had to be got out again. And they were absolutely tremendous, really wonderful. And they did a marvelous handover from that point of view. They could tell us everything that was going on. They told us how to organize the routines that we had to go through, particularly patrolling every night the command of no man's land, which was always so important. Otherwise, they could start tightening in towards your perimeter. And
how far out would you go on those patrols to no man's land?
The whole thing was coordinated by the battalion and by the brigades. Mostly, they were just reconnaissance patrols. But because there were so many of us out, I mean, this was happening right round the perimeter. We had to go out at specific times and on specific, usually on a triangular course, and on a specific bearing for so many paces and no further, and then something else and back in again, all absolutely dead on time. Otherwise, you're allowed to bump to other patrols. And so the intelligence officer of the battalion, it was his job to coordinate these patrols every night, and indeed coordinate it with his opposite number in the Black Watch, who were next door to us. We had the sea on our left. So we had the first 2 miles of the perimeter on the eastern sector, but they had the next they had the next couple of miles.
How deep would you go then into no man's land?
Well, normally,
from your own front locality?
We did send fighting patrols out occasionally.
Yeah.
And they went, that very often that was the best part of a platoon went out at a time. And they might go a bit further. They'd go out half a mile, a mile, even a mile further out, because the enemy who were investing us, they weren't in a continual line. They had their sort of strong points out there, but of course they were always trying to find out things about us.
Were there lots of clashes, patrol clashes in no man's land?
Occasionally, more with the little reconnaissance patrols, if the enemy had moved and had dug himself in somewhere else, all of which happened at night time, of course. So most times, if we were actually many of the patrols going out, they would hear noise, digging, or whatever, when they didn't need to make any noise themselves. And so quite often they located new activity and could sit there for a while and listen to it and then come back and say where it was. And, well, whatever happened went back to brigade, who coordinated this information, and they might do a shoot on it the next day or not, or however they interpreted the information we brought back. We did lose one or two guys on patrols where they did have a bump with the Italians and or the Germans.
You mentioned you had concrete installations, no minefields protecting the perimeter. Mm. What about wire? Was there an extensive belt?
Oh yes, there was a ditch. There was a ditch and a wire barrier right round, which had been there for a long, long time. Probably the Italians dug the ditch in the first place.
It's
and
an anti-tank ditch.
I think, oh yes, 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 it was a sheer drop of 15, 20 feet or something. I think there were mines in it as well. So it would have to have been bridged for anybody to have got through it. And there was quite a lot of wire as well. I couldn't say exactly what it was like because it had been patched up and reinforced and shot up a bit and changed all the time. But it was a good substantial tank barrier and a wired barrier out in front of front of our positions there.
Presumably this also had to go on at night, the work of repairing the wire obstacle or other...
Well, one could see whether the wire needed repairing.
But you'd only be able to do it at night. You wouldn't be able to move around in the daytime.
Well, that's right, yes. We didn't move around in the daytime at all. Because we didn't... If they could get the impression that some of the posts were occupied and some not, but didn't quite know, the less they knew, the better, of course. So everything was done at night time, and at movement. The rations were brought up at night time, although they could do a bit of sort of rudimentary cooking themselves in their quite deep concrete pits. Some of them are, a couple of stories deep. They were sort of fixed defences. And so that was the life we led for a while.
Was there a lot of enemy artillery fire on your...
Yes, normally they were, and the Stukas came over because they were just up on top of the escarpment at El Adam, above Tobruk, and they had a substantial air force up there, and they not only had to go at the ships. What they used to do is to come over in the early morning when it was light, before the haze had come off the desert, and then they would have a go. Not so us. They were after the guns more, after our guns and the harbour and, the more infantry didn't matter too much from their point of view.
Well, if you were in the Italian...
And so the shelling was also done. Yeah. They'd loose off. And we'd have sort of an exchange of counter-battery fire going on.
If you were in concrete shelters, it would make it very difficult to damage you.
Well, they didn't try to damage it. We didn't get much shelling.
Yeah, because that's why they would go for the guns.
Well, they'd far rather knock out the guns which were firing back at them rather than worry about us.
I'm presuming the guns would be in the open.
The guns were behind us.
Yes.
You see, perhaps a mile behind. They used to move at night time from one set of emplacements to another and that sort of thing.
But they weren't in purpose-built concrete emplacements.
No, but they were pretty well dug in by this time.
They had their gun pits, wouldn't they?
Yes, I think so. Quite honestly, I don't remember.
How did you handle communications with them? Did you have a line direct back from
battalion
headquarters?
No, but at the battalion headquarters, we had an FOO.
Right.
We also had a Royal Artillery captain with us who was... and we had him the whole time when we did the breakout later on. And we had a sapper with us as well. Exactly what he did, I don't quite know, but no doubt he had given his orders to...
Did you have a field company as part of the brigade?
Hmm?
Did you have a sapper field company as part of the brigade?
No, I don't know. I can't answer that one offhand. I don't remember. Probably. And also, I think we had the best part of a field ambulance back at brigade headquarters. You see, we weren't mobile, so these things could be set up near to this or not, as the case may be, and probably were like that when we arrived, very largely. There was a sort of main hospital back in the town in Tobruk, and but we certainly had a field hospital, and of course we had our own MO. He must have had a pit or two of his own, and so we settled down to the sort of routine life. Water was very short, of course. It was very brackish because the sea water had got into it. It was well water that came out of the... And, of course, there were a lot of guys in Tobruk at that time. I can't remember how many. No doubt you could look that up sometime or other. But, well, by this time we had the 70th Division, 70th British Division, which had then got three full brigades and its divisional artillery, and then there was the Polish Carpathian Brigade on the eastern sector. Some of the gunners had stayed in and not gone out when at the relief, and some had been there for the whole of the 200. And they reckon the siege of Tobruk was as long as any in World War, 250 something days, I think. But there were yeomanry. We had yeomanry.
Essex Yeomanry was there, weren't
they? And one or two other yeomanry regiments. And as I say, their 25-pounders had no rifling in the barrels at all at that time. but we had this. We also had the 2nd Field Regiment with us at that time, because I think we brought them in with us. So we had a few more guns. I believe there was one Spitfire in a cave somewhere in... in Tobruk, but I don't think anybody ever dared let it out, because it probably got shot down almost immediately and probably wouldn't have had done very much damage to anybody. There were, well, the 4th Royal Tanks were there and more. There were cruiser tanks we had in there, as well as the I tank.
Were there any tanks in the brigade area?
No, I think they would have been held further back, because there was really nothing for them to do other than to counter an incursion into the perimeter, should that have taken place.
Were there any major attempts at making such an incursion?
It was... it very nearly happened, but I'll tell you about this in a moment. But no, they never actually tried to penetrate the perimeter during our time there. I'm talking about now October, November... Really, only October, November. Because the next thing was that the brigade was pulled back. The whole of the brigade was pulled back and into some reserve area, and somebody else went up into the line. I don't know, maybe they had to thin it out. But we were told that we were going to do the breakout to link up with a thrust that was coming up from Egypt. They'd just been called the 8th Army at that time, I think. It was in Auchinleck was the CNC at the time, and a man called Ritchie was the commander of 8th Army, I suppose. This was in November of 1941. They were going to come up from Egypt and have a drive down the desert. And we had instructions to get ready to break out, to link up with them, somewhere up on the escarpment that looked down onto the coastal plain, including the whole of the Tobruk setup. Okay, so we did this, and we did some training and coordinating with sappers and gunners and people like that. There was a huge sand model of the eastern sector, and what we thought we knew was on the outside. Again, strong points that we would have had to have attacked and reduced as part of thrusting out our own salient and linking up with the with the 8th Army coming up from Egypt. And so we were trained to do this. And we were told, you know, on D-Day, the Black Watch, Second Black Watch, drew the short straw. They were going to go out first. And they were going to attack, and with the help of the tanks, they were going to attack and reduce the first two major strong points which were out there. Only Italians, so don't worry, you can brush them on one side, unquote. And then we were going to leapfrog through them and take some more further out, so
your
push
would be the second in the
with the first Bedfords, yes.
Yeah, so the Black Watch would go off first.
That's right.
How far were they supposed to go before you passed?
Well, they'd have gone about a mile out,
so
and taken on the nearest strong points facing us.
And then you passed.
We would leapfrog through them and go for some further ones.
So the second line behind the first line.
That's the sort of thing. Yes. Yes, it wasn't lines, but they were really sort of fried eggs of strong points out to the east of us, and each of them we knew were sort of fortified. Strong points.
What's the strength of these strong points? Do you know, were they company positions that you were going to be attacking?
I think some of them were quite strong, but I'll tell you something a bit more about them in a moment.
Mm. What about the York and Lancs? Were they going to?
They were the reserve battalion, and they were going to come out in vehicles with the cruiser tanks, which are faster, and the idea was that they'd break right through them, through the Black Watch, through us, and generally cause mayhem round the back of the troops investing Tobruk, out to the east, and hopefully get them into such a mess that they couldn't really cause too much trouble, while our guys were fighting the main battle against Rommel's panzers and what have you, further up the hill across the escarpment and along towards Egypt. And so this was the plan. Of course, plan never works, but never mind. So at dawn on the day, 21st of November, 1941, almost 60 years ago, the Black Watch went through the, you know, we went up into sort of assembly areas just behind our perimeter. And during the night, the sappers put a, others put rather strong patrol activity out, but the sappers bridged our ditch, and so off the Black Watch went, and they had some eye tanks with them, flat out at 8 miles an hour or whatever the eye tanks did, and they ran into deep trouble. For two reasons. First of all, the tanks immediately ran onto mines which we didn't know about, or they didn't know about. And the Black Watch said, well, okay, we're just going to go on by ourselves. And they took a lot of casualties. I know they, at the end of the first morning, they only had two subalterns left on their feet, and a lot of other casualties. In fact, they had one of our rifle companies were attached to them, because we were all pretty well under strength. And so to give them some weight, they had our D company was attached to them for this operation. And they got about a mile out there, and they did eventually take not one strong point, which they were going to do, but they took two, because in all the shelling and dust and muck, they probably lost direction a bit. And they went between two of these strong points, and they got enfiladed. And this is when they took a lot of casualties, and they still had to bust through there. They were wired in, these strong points, and they had Germans in them, not Italians. And because the Germans, there were a lot of German sappers as well as the infantry and anti-tank gunners and what have you, because they were going to have a go at us almost straight down the axis out of which we went. 2 days later, their plan was to come into us the other way, and we didn't know about that.
What sort of artillery support did the Black Watch have there?
Well, from about 2 a.m, everything in the garrison opened up. They put a barrage down, but, you know...